Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And our good martini comes from primary night. It was primary night in two important states, Florida and Arizona. On a number of fronts, we did not get results we were hoping for. Debbie Wasserman Schultz sadly survived her primary, although she's running against a Bernie clone, so that wouldn't have been a lot better, but it would have been fun to see her lose. A lot of conservatives not that happy that John McCain got renominated out in Arizona, but that was not very close. Marco Rubio easily gets renominated for Senate in Florida, but it's the Florida Democratic Senate primary that is the focus of our good martini today. Jim, part of us deep down probably wanted Alan Grayson to win the primary because it would be that much easier for Marco Rubio to slaughter him in November. But to watch Alan Grayson not only lose, but lose by the span of about 59% to 18% to a deeply flawed candidate like Patrick Murphy shows that the voters of Florida, certainly statewide, want nothing to do with this man. And when Democrats are coming to that conclusion, we know that we're hopefully seeing the near end of this guy in politics.
Yeah, it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy, Greg. there are a couple ways you can know everything you need to know about Alan Grayson. Anthony Weiner thought he was weird, and Harry Reid thought he had no moral compass. So kind of like Tiger Woods saying you're good at golf or something like that. You know, perspective for considering the source. But yeah, this guy was a walking Daily Coast comment section come to life, consistently not just obnoxious to his Republican rivals and incendiary his language. And he once called a witness before Congress a K Street whore. Alan Grayson was just a classless, obnoxious, vulgar human being who did not deserve to be in Congress once. This is not the first time you and I have probably celebrated the defeat of Alan Grayson. He was defeated in the 2010 midterm election, but the district lines moved. He was able to run for a different seat, and he won re-election in 2012 in a much more favorable district. It is nice to see that for all the flaws of Florida, for all the flaws in the Democratic Party there, I don't know about you, Greg, Patrick Murphy's empty suit has never looked so good. You really have not done very much with your life, Patrick Murphy. But now you've got a genuine service to the country by sending Alan Grayson packing. Congressman Grayson, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you on the way out.
Well, that certainly is true. For those who don't remember, Alan Grayson during the Obamacare debate said the Republican plan was for everyone to die quickly. He also referred to his 2010 opponent, Dan Webster, who defeated him, as Taliban Dan, for a variety of reasons, thinking he was too socially conservative, apparently. And another fun twist to this, Jim, is that in Grayson's House seat, his brand new wife, after a very ugly split from his ex-wife, was running to win the House seat, and she lost as well. She came in third place. She was far more competitive than he was, but there will be no more Graysons in Congress come January. And while I don't think they did exit polls on the Democratic primary, my guess is that the majority of Democrats in the district said, if you have the judgment to marry Alan Grayson, you do not have the judgment to serve us in Congress.
You know, Greg, if I ever form a super PAC, it would be the Partnership for a Grayson-Free America.
That would be a good one, particularly if it's based in Florida. Wow. So, yeah, let's hope he never comes back. We shall see. Let's move on to the bad martini now. This comes to us courtesy of the Washington Times. The IRS has discovered more than 1 million Americans whose Social Security numbers were stolen by illegal immigrants, but officials never bothered to tell the taxpayers themselves, the agency's inspector general said in a withering new report released Tuesday. Investigators first alerted the IRS to the problem 5 years ago, but it's still not fixed, and a pilot program meant to test a solution was canceled and fell woefully short anyway. As a result, most taxpayers don't learn that their identities have been stolen and their Social Security files may be screwed up. The inspector general says taxpayers identified as victims of employment-related identity theft are not notified. The report alarmed lawmakers on Capitol Hill who were shocked that the IRS had gone for so long without fixing the issue. Jim, I'm guessing you and I are slightly less shocked by this, but the fact that the IRS is derelict in the one thing they're supposed to do, which is, you know, protect the American taxpayer. Meantime, they're out there trying to harass taxpayers filing for tax-exempt status. So another reason for John Koskinen to go, and just another deplorable example of the government asleep at the switch.
Well, kind of want to say to the Internal Revenue Service, wait, now you're lazy? Now you don't want to contact me? Now you don't want to tell me what's going on in my business? Wait a minute, wait, now? There's two things to jump out. I assume, Greg, this is where people who come to the country illegally and need to put in a Social Security number in order to at least look like a legal worker, and they just make up a fake nine-digit number?
Correct.
The first thing is, if your Social Security number happens to be 123-45-6789, you're in trouble. That strikes me as probably the most obvious and easy one, and I'd argue nobody should have that Social Security number assigned to them. So is the idea that it's not that harmful because they're just making payments to Social Security in your name? Because if that's the case, Greg, if somebody's using my Social Security number to make Social Security payments, I want credit for their payments. Make it work for me, right? If you're going to steal my identity, at least you get credit for everything you're doing. We're now used to stories of federal bureaucrats not doing their jobs and messing up and being derelict of duty. This is kind of, you know, why I wrote the lead agency, and I'm glad it changed everything. but unfortunately, it is not surprising that, and it can be deeply frustrating, you can point out a problem to a federal agency. They can nod as if they understand it, want to do something about it. And here you are 5 years later and nothing's been done. And there's an excellent chance that, presuming you and I are still doing the Three Martini Lunch 5 years from now, that we'll probably be able to write to do this. We can just replay this entire segment, Greg, and it'll be exactly the same thing. Because the IRS has proven itself highly resistant to change.
Yeah, the article goes on to pretty much say exactly what you suspected. Victims' numbers are stolen by illegal immigrants who need to give employers a valid Social Security number in order to get a job. This is fun. Employers are prohibited from probing too deeply into numbers, even when they suspect fraud.
Why? Oh, they can't have people try to check out fraud. They might catch some. Just as they don't, you know, look, if somebody writes a check and the signature doesn't match what they've had before, don't look too deeply at it, okay? Don't ask too many questions. That's the first rule of security, right, Greg?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, well, we're clearly got the best people on this. All right. Well, Jim, when the political situation is so dire and frustrating, we need a release, and that release is usually sports. We got the NFL season kicking off here in a number of days. College football starts this weekend. Baseball pennant race is going. And unfortunately, as we have chronicled far too many times this year, whether it's the saga of Curt Schilling to many different other things that ESPN and the ongoing politicization of sports have done, is that we can't even get a respite through sports because everything keeps getting shoved into the prism of politics. Case in point, the contrast between how different personalities at ESPN reacted to the controversy over Colin Kaepernick as opposed to Tim Tebow simply trying to pursue a professional baseball career. Let's start with the always under control Stephen A. Smith talking about Colin. There's a lot of Stephen A. Smith here, and I apologize for that in advance. Here's him talking about Colin Kaepernick earlier this week.
It's the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. That is what Colin Kaepernick exercised. So when people bring up our military and they bring up our soldiers as it pertains to his refusal to stand and salute during our national anthem, that's a problem.
That's a problem. Then Mike Greenberg from Mike and Mike talking with Bomani Jones says, oh, there's no problem with Kaepernick's patriotism. It's the people criticizing him.
Is that the issue that you're seeing here, or at least part of the issue that you're seeing here, is that there are people who are avoiding discussing the issue because they're making the issue the act of not standing during the anthem?
I think that that's a big part of it. I also think that people have a tendency in this country to cut check other people's patriotism, which is a lot of what this is right here.
Okay, now fast forward to Tuesday when Tim Tebow was at the campus of USC and 28 different Major League scouts went out to see if he had potential to be added to their teams. And the reports were pretty mixed, most of them suggesting that he's probably not Major League material, which had the SportsCenter gang virtually gleeful on Tuesday night. Then this morning, back to Stephen A. Smith. First of all, he says it's not about Tebow. He's really mad at the baseball teams.
And for 28 teams to show up to watch him play is an absolute disgrace. I am not blaming Tim Tebow for this in the slightest. You are allowed to dream. This is America.
And then about a minute later, he said this really is Tebow's fault.
I want to give props to Tim Tebow because somehow, some way, you don't mind being the manipulative individual that you are in your quest to gain notoriety for things unearned.
The discrepancy here could not be greater. Tim Tebow just wants to pursue a dream. He said afterwards, if it doesn't happen, at least he tried. He has no regrets. He's got a wonderful life to go back to, which includes commentating on college football for ESPN, by the way. But apparently just the fact that he wanted to do this has ESPN all bent out of shape.
Greg, you and I have had a very good relationship of many years of co-hosting this podcast, and most of the time you do a fine job, but I have a bone to pick with you today, Greg.
What's that?
You did not just play two sound bites from Stephen A. Smith.
You did not
just do that. Actually, you did not. Stephen A. Smith keeps saying, you did not just pass the ball away from... Actually, the person just did. We just watched it on video, Stephen A. It's like Mr. McEnroe. Yes, the ref really was serious. So besides the fact that Stephen A. Smith's job, he's remarkably entertaining. He just seems to hyperventilate over the most mundane things. And it always comes down to, now I know Tim Tebow. He and I have spent a great deal of time together. We go on vacations together. Our wives know each other. We have raised each other children. We bathe together. He'd go over and over into this. So it always hurts him so personally to criticize these people. But bring it back to the assessment of Kaepernick. Put it in terms Stephen A. would understand. You did not just say that criticizing Kaepernick is an attack on the First Amendment. No, no one's saying he doesn't have the right to say this. No one is saying the police should arrest Colin Kaepernick for what he's doing. The question is whether you think it's wise, whether you think it's valid, whether you think it's he's making a good point, or whether you think what he's doing is kind of asinine. And the point that I've, particularly enjoyed focusing in on is, like, when Colin Kaepernick sits, what does he think everybody else is doing? Does he think everybody else is saying, I'm fine with this country, there's no problems, there's nothing I'd like to fix about it or change about it, hooray for police brutality, hooray for no accountability? No, everybody, I'm sure, hope the vast majority of the people around him are every bit as bothered by it as Colin Kaepernick does, but they stand for the national anthem anyway, because in spite of America's flaws, they still love the country. And Kaepernick's gesture, whether or not he wants it to be interpreted this way, is basically to say, because of the flaws, I can't do this anymore. I won't stand for it. I don't see anything of value. I don't see enough in value in this. And so I think it's perfectly valid to do that, and I think it's a bit of a dodge. It's interesting to see, I'm a fan of the Mike and Mike guys. You talk about how sports is getting more political, Greg. I used to yell at my radio on the sports radio station to get a break from yelling at my radio from the news talk station. Sports used to be where you talk to a completely different, you'd listen to a completely different kind of nincompoop who didn't know what he was talking about. And now it just kind of feels like those worlds are blurring. But making the issue Kaepernick not standing is a dodge. I think saying, no, 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 you're attacking the First Amendment is every bit as much a dodge. And Stephen, you cannot do that, even though you just did.
And what do you make of their mocking of Tebow? Even before the workout, they were mocking it. And now afterwards, virtually the same thing.
Didn't we all watch Michael Jordan try to play baseball? Those of us who are sympathetic to Tebow have the suspicion that that he's judged by a different standard, that because he's very outspoken about his faith, he has become a stand-in for the religious right or religious conservatives or evangelical Christians, and people who don't like that group take it out on Tim Tebow in a way they would never take it out on other groups. And this certainly seems to add fuel to that fire, Greg. You cannot do that!
Way to go, ESPN. Way to go.
Way to go.
Jim, talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.